they say we should have known better than to fall so deep down into this rabbit hole.
Get we found. Ready. It's time again to venture down the rabbit hole into the world of cybersecurity. You're plugged into the podcast for security leaders and practitioners with a business sense. Prepare for unique interviews, insights, and practical advice that makes your job just a bit easier. And now, please welcome your guides on this adventure, James Jardine and the White Rabbit, Ruffalos.
Alrighty, good morning, good afternoon, and good evening to you, wherever you are, whatever you're doing. Welcome down the security rabbit hole to yet another edition of the Down the Security Rabbit Hole podcast. And before we get going, enough of you guys have asked me recently that I'll simply reiterate the intro song is Deep Down by Josh Gabriel featuring Winter Kills. And I selected that just years ago because it's, you know, it's a rabbit hole themed song. And I sent it, I originally sent DM'd it to the original author. To which he replied, "That's cool." I was like, "Oh yeah, hero level." So, Deep Down, Josh Gabriel featuring Winter Kills, awesome tune. Anyway, so this episode, James, I think I'm doing this thing where like I'm bringing back people I used to work with, or work around, and we've all gone and do cool things other places now, because some of the places we worked weren't so cool. In that case. Stan, welcome to the podcast.
Thanks, Ralph. It's a great segue.
Yeah, right. Not to speak ill of the dead, yeah, or the walking dead, but the place that we worked at together didn't fare so well after we all left.
Yeah, not quite the best, but yeah, you know, we know how it is.
At least sadly, the people stayed cool. It was just the company that was not cool anymore. So that there's a positive side to that.
Listen, I'm gonna couch it as this. Anytime you work for a security company and the combined security experience of their leadership, all five of them, is that many, 0.0, that's a problem. Anyway, moving on, not to rehash old injuries and time wasted. But all right, Stan, tell us a little bit about yourself and the place that you're at now.
Yeah, absolutely. Raf, James, thanks to guys for having me on the podcast. So my name is Stan Golubchik. I'm CEO, co-founder of ContraForce. We started a little under 2 years ago, and really ContraForce, we built it to go downstream to address the underserviced market for SMBs and SMEs. And the way I like to put it is really democratizing security operations. We typically think that security operations is very much an enterprise function. So we knew there was a better way to be able to get that kind of capability into the hands of IT operators, outward security experts, to help them do better security effectively.
And I'm going to have to give you like mega kudos because you managed to sneak a 90s video game reference into your company title.
Yeah, I get asked that quite a bit. Where'd you get the name? And, you know, I think actually we had one or two fans. They built a, it was essentially the fan art of the ContraForce video game from SNES, and they put, you know, me and Ricky on there, and I'll send it to you. It kind of was weird to see like Ricky's face on, you know, like a ContraForce video game body, but yeah, appreciate the nod there.
Yeah, it's a kind of awesome. All right. So, yes, going down market is a traditional problem. Like James and I, we've talked about this probably more times than I would really care to recall over the last 500 plus episodes, but security operations seems to be an effective security operation seems to be the luxury of the well-funded. And as you go down market, you look at SMBs for sureties, but like small, medium enterprises, those kinds of companies typically have some issues, right? Operationalizing it, whether it's hiring, whether it's maintaining talent, whether it's paying the license fees. I mean, God help you if you try to put those two together. How did you get to starting a company on this? Because I got to tell you, many have tried. To this point, all have failed. So what was in your head? How did you get there? I want to hear a little bit about the story.
Yeah, so when we started, a lot of it kind of predicated, Raph, like you mentioned, from the company that we came from. We saw a way not in which to do, enterprise security for the small businesses. A lot of it really also, this is really first and foremost, it's a economic barrier, right? So like the unit of economics, we saw this. You can't go sell something at, X amount of dollars and expect to be providing a comprehensive solution for these companies and them being able to actually budget that in, right? So really that's where we started first, was saying like, can we go after a service that's cloud native, it's available, it's relatively consolidated and commoditized. So from a unit of economics, let's start from a bottoms up approach to make sure that it's first and foremost accessible from a price perspective. So that's kind of where we started. When we got that down and we did some product positioning and looking at the pricing margins, that allowed us to be able then to understand the value, the workflows, and the user experience that we had to build around that. So we actually did a lot of user interviews initially. So we went to small companies. And when I say small, it's from 50 to 250 employees. And these companies
That's
had
small.
one or two, yeah, it's small, absolutely, one or two IT people. So we'd go talk with them and say, hey, what do you guys know about cybersecurity? We didn't know what we were going to get. We thought, hey, some of these IT operators, they're going to know firewall, they're going to know AV, and maybe some basic Active Directory. But to our surprise, they actually knew a lot more than we
Really?
anticipated. Some of them were shopping for SIEM solutions, not the
Hold
best.
on,
And
wait, stop, 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 time out. I'm going to flag on the play. 250 person company shopping for a SIEM solution? Oh my God, please don't.
No, and exactly. So, when we talk to them, we go, do you know what you're really looking at? Do you know what you're about to get yourself into? They don't have any idea because they didn't have the experience. But
But
from
company
their
told them.
understanding, yeah, we definitely told them, like, do not go down that path. There's no point of return. And so they definitely needed, there was a need for consolidating data. And because they're seeing that, hey, they're going through digital transformation. Still, a ton of these companies were on-prem. They have their, physical domain controller for Active Directory. They didn't have a hybrid setup. So they had issues taking these signals from all these places and putting them together. And so their default thing was, hey, we're going to get a SIEM. That's going to help us with some analytics. We don't know what it's really going to do when we put it in or how we're going to get the value out of it. They didn't think that far. They just thought about data coming together. So that's kind of where we started. And then we started kind of reverse engineering from there to understand what is it that they're really trying to get out of that data. Because for us, it's really about focusing on the data and the threat context around security content to be able to give value to customers.
Where
That makes sense.
that push coming from when you talk about a small company like that, where they're, hey, we're looking at SIEMs, we're looking at this. Is that coming from like the IT person that they have, or is it actually coming top down, like the organization saying, we have to be able to do this due to, Raph, we talk about this, right? Cyber insurance,
That's right. It's a good
other stuff
question.
like that. Like, what's driving that in these smaller orgs?
Yeah, great question. It's really depending on the profile of that organization. So if it's an organization that has compliance, regulatory pressures coming from external factors, that's typically a top-down initiative, right? Because, hey, you know what? We need to go get our SOC 2 out of the way because we need to go work with larger supply chain enterprise contracts. Great. The CEO, right, might come in and say, hey, we need to have this in place. IT manager, what are you guys doing? Or you got to go find out what we need to do, go shopping. Those that aren't being driven through those regulatory pressures, we're seeing that these IT individuals are trying to figure a better way to actually provide security for their business without having right now all this manual process built into their day-to-day. I mean, it's crazy to see how many alerts they're getting from. We had this one construction company as an example, several hundred million revenue. Probably about 40% of alerts that they actually mitigate today is from their CCTV. So it's not even like digital alerts, it's
Interesting.
not security alerts, it's actually physical alerts from all their premise. So, and this one person was managing all this.
Oh dear
So it really
God.
just kind of, it depends where you're coming from, the top down or the bottom up, and what's the really the business driver. So that's really the big, I think, delineation there.
That's interesting. I mean, look, that's actually interesting because you said like the security tends to be we used to th we tend to think of it as a digital, like cyber thing, but you've got in these smaller companies, like the CCTV thing is a big deal. There are other parts of that that I guess, fall into security that we wouldn't think about. And I mean, you talk about being able to operationalize your technology. I think at that tiny scale, it doesn't even matter what you can buy. Like buying a Sims almost sounds like a terrible idea because all you're going to do is get screamed at like Sam Kinison style all day long, right? From about all these bad things that are happening in your network. Potentially, you don't know. And you waste a truckload of time trying to chase after these various things, and the queue keeps piling and gets longer. And eventually, you're like, I give up, bankrupt, start over, right? And yeah. is that increasing security for anybody? Like, and look, anything, I think anybody that's under 1,000 employees, where you actually, when you don't have, when you have IT people, you don't have security people. Even if you have security people, like on the smaller end, they should be focused on engineering, not operations. And we've talked about this a million times, even with the old company, right? It was like, there's no reason anybody outside the Fortune 1000 should be trying to build a SOC today or doing SecOps. Yep. There's just none. You're not going to do it well. So find an expert, let them do it. At this point, it's just a matter of scale, cost, and integrations. Can you make them part of your everyday environment? And that's what it seems like you're solving for.
Exactly. It's really about, I mean, one of the things, and Graf, we talked about this pretty extensively. You mentioned this, it's automating security engineering, right? So, you know, if we can give the functionality of something like a SIM, a SOAR, without them actually having to do the back end coding, huge value, right? And James, you mentioned this as well too, you know, that's one more of the complex things we're trying to help customers ramp up to, but there's also just basic hygiene, right? So a lot of this basic hygiene is being pressed onto these companies by insurance providers. So today, you know, from a top-down perspective, we also see a CEO, they're now writing or getting underwritten with a cybersecurity policy and insurance, but their premium is just right through the roof. And their sublimits are down, exclusions are up. Maybe you guys saw that one with Lloyd's Bank, right? In March next year, they're excluding nation state attacks. So it's like these guys are between a rock and a hard place. They're getting horrible sublimit policies at, you know, $50,000 to $100,000 premiums. And that doesn't cover a business when they're generating, you know, 100 to 500 million in revenue. So there's definitely a massive disconnect, but also at the same time, I understand why the premiums are going up, because these companies are implementing things as simple as MFA. So we still have to go talk to businesses and convince them why MFA is needed, and then why, you know, 20 people create a ticket to complain about how intrusive it is, and, you know, being able to mitigate the whole business conversation. So there's definitely a kind of a nice mix that we have to find between the two.
I'm thinking of this becoming, I mean, in IT, really, especially on the lower end, that becomes a death spiral for a lot of companies, because you know, your premium goes up and sometimes you can't afford it, right? The number of security things you have to do to get to even afford that premium goes up, which means odds are you're going to struggle to get there. And then you don't have insurance, or you've got junky insurance with a lot of exclusions and really high, you know, high deductibles. And it gets really sketchy. And I've for years really been concerned about small business, because they have really indiscriminately, look, the attackers that attack indiscriminately will hit small business, large business, home users. They don't care, right? And even like if you want to think about it from a national security perspective, like some of the directives that have come out of CISA and some of the attempts at CMMC and stuff, they require that these companies to have a verifiable level of operational security in a 5-10 person, 25 person, 100 person shop that's doing massive government contracts. And I say massive, I mean like secretive, right? Things that are important. And you're like, okay, well, how the financial model, never mind the operational model, hasn't made sense before. I got to ask you, how did you get to because this has been the challenge, especially with our last gig, how did you get the ability to price it in a way that they can afford without going like super far down market in the tool set? What do you guys use? Can I ask? Is that secret sauce?
A little bit, but yeah, I mean, I can keep it high level enough. I mean, a lot of it was, I'll give you an example with one thing that we see a ton of value. We built something called proprietary to us, a game book. And essentially, it's just a daisy chain of a bunch of playbooks. And so it's context that we use kind of as carousel that we can load into a customer's environment, and they can pick context situational aware playbooks depending on the incident. So it takes the guesswork. So they don't first have to go through the entire triage investigation process and then say, this is the best response for this specific alert or incident. We give that to them and then tell them, here are the best play. These are the best playbooks you should run. For us, it's pretty simple for us to be able to bring that at a accessible level from a unit of economics is just using native cloud services, right? And that's kind of what I go to when I mentioned around commoditizing, right? I mean, if you look at SIEM, started early 2000s, right? It's still very much it's a commodity in terms of the function, right? If you're going open source, you're going to a private company that's, licensing it out, the real value and cost comes into the security engineering, the people that have to maintain that engine. So that's where we obviously have more cost, but from a backend technology perspective, I mean, it's fractional cents just to be able to run things like a game book for our clients. So it helps us scale out, and we can focus more on where customers need the help, which is kind of being a sounding board and helping them guide them through some, security expertise if that needs to be the case. So the technology actually isn't really the hard part to scale. It's really figuring out how do we balance the technology versus how much people resources we need in the business to make sense. Because Raf, you've seen this, right? If you go to like a traditional MSSP or MDR provider, saw some recent funding, right, with some, large scale MSSP. You guys may know what I'm talking about. That's not a cash efficient business, right? It's not operationally efficient. You got to throw bodies, more bodies, more bodies, train them. We know the whole skill set problem. So we're trying to
People
essentially
do
kind of
not
change
scale.
that. They don't scale. They don't, absolutely. So there's that paradox. So we're trying to essentially say, can we go to the people that are already in the business, like the IT provider, and offload that cost away from our business? And that's really about investing in the technology, which we found has scaled pretty well. I mean, we use, Azure on the back end. I mean, and that's pretty much as far as much as I can tell you.
So that's really good though. But I mean, look, when you look at the way to scale security, it's never been people. It's just never been. We've tried people repeatedly over and over and over again, but it's never been people. But also, out of the box tech from the pick your vendor doesn't work either, because there's a the people aspect gives you the relativity to the business that they're in. The tech gives you scale, but lacks the relativity. So there's some magic of the two. And if look, technology's purpose really has always been to scale humankind and our ability to process quickly and decide, make decisions, and give us the ability to decide quickly. If you've moved us into that arena where, and I imagine, look, there's there. This is not. I'm going to use a funny term, but this is not DoD level security we're talking here, right? These are smaller companies, right? They need to do like foundational things first. And if they
Yes.
get those right, maybe we move them on to like more advanced things. But the stair step method, I think, is good. What do you consider the fundamentals there, Stan?
So, I mean, we can look at it from all sorts of different angles, but I mean, just looking at something as basic as NIST and just looking at the controls in there, right? That's pretty good, right? So, we always look at customers, we talk to them about just implement MFA, have an EDR solution. Make sure that you have least privilege set up with your Active Directory. We always obviously recommend logging just because a lot of times customers have a really bad time doing that. So when something does happen, we can't look at historical data to actually look at lessons learned. Those kind of things. And then usually some kind of web-based, either email filtering or web-based proxy is usually a nice thing, especially now how we're seeing so much SaaS sprawl. Those are really strong tools to implement. I mean, there's probably a few more, but if we start there, I think it's a pretty strong baseline that we can build off. And like you said, it's really steps. It's a stair approach, right? We got to just crawl, then we got to walk, and then hopefully we can run. I mean, we're trying to get the customers to start, jogging a lot sooner. We feel there's ways we can do that, but definitely if they don't have the basics, then it doesn't really matter.
We talk about not being able to scale people, but it makes me wonder, and I've thought this for a long time, are we going to see more people get better at different things? Like, we're starting to put tasks in the right spot. Like you're talking about, we have this small organization. All they have is an IT person, right? Who's already handling all the endpoints. They're doing all this different stuff. Maybe they've got antivirus. Maybe they've got these other things. But we start talking about these other pieces. In a big organization, we'd create five new teams to be able to handle each one of those separately. Like, oh, this person's going to handle EDR, and this person's going to handle SIM, and this person's going to handle that. But when we get the small companies, do we become more efficient because we can take that one IT person and actually just expand upon their roles and say, okay, this is what we're going to slowly add into this, so that we don't need to bring in five different teams? Like, the IT person can do this. Will we start seeing more people that have both the IT skill and the security knowledge that goes with that to be able to handle this, where we don't need to build out billion-dollar cybersecurity budgets, you know, for something that's small and doesn't need all that? I would argue large probably doesn't need all that either, but, you know.
Yeah. No, I agree. I mean, yeah, we see the sprawl in the enterprise and what that can do. I think I agree with you 100%, James. I think the idea, especially in the smaller market, is really relevant when you look at the complexity of all the security. I mean, we've heard this so many times, right? The PPT, the people, process, technology. I think as we go to the smaller market, like the way I talk about it is the PPA, right? The people, process, automation. The technology is only as good as the people, the process behind it, driving it, right? So what I think we're seeing, especially cyber, even outside of cyber, right? Just in the tech space, it's abstraction of technology and the need to actually get into the base core of managing and configuring that technology. You know, if that's low, no code, I'm just throwing out some marketing jargon, obviously, but that's really what it is, right? It's abstracting the need to get into the weeds of being able to understand, okay, how do I go write this query, right? How do I write this detection logic? Those are things that, like you said, we need more generalists in the space. And I think the need for like an IT person, you know, typically they would be really apt when it comes to network and understanding packets, understanding protocols. But now they're having to increase their aptitude to another level to understand more basic fundamentals of cybersecurity, because it's just here to stay and it's only growing more as an anchor of what they need to know. So yeah, I think it's becoming consolidated and we're seeing people in the smaller businesses take on more. Unfortunately, their pay grade isn't really going up. So maybe that can change and maybe more people would be a little bit less adverse to adopt those kind of, you know, responsibilities.
Well, that's a dilemma of a small business anyway, right? I mean, yeah. You know, there's a reason why absolutely. Small businesses don't have the unicorns that, you know, have 20 years of security experience and know everything about everything, because they can't afford them, right? I mean, you're unfortunately limited there. That's the reason why you have one IT person instead of two IT people, because, you know, budget's super small. But I think that highlights the need that, which was surprising, I thought, the number of people who are saying, oh, yeah, it's just not firewalls and this. They're actually looking at these other things. We're seeing the general IT people starting to look and take into and adopt some of the security stuff that natively should be there anyway. Like, you know, it blows my mind when you see organizations where antivirus now is no longer a system IT thing. It's a security thing. Yeah, it's antivirus, right? You go to the small company, the IT guy's like, yeah, I run antivirus. That's what I do. That's part of IT. You go to the big company, it's like, no, that's corp security. And within corp security, we have three people that's focused on, you know, doing this stuff.
Anti-malware, yeah.
You know, we start getting back into, like, that's IT. Security is an add-on to IT. How do we get that, you know, back into what we're seeing there? And I think small businesses have that capability, right? Because we have smaller asset counts, so asset inventory should be less complex.
Yes.
You know, all that stuff should be less complex. We have the ability to see clearly and say, okay, how can we actually manage that properly, instead of saying, oh, well, I need, you know, three different teams to do this. Like, no, we can do this. We just need to build it into what we're doing.
You know what's interesting? I sort of envision this. This runbook playbook stuff sticks in my head quite a bit, because we talk about this with really large companies. We talk about this with smaller companies and they sort of just kind of glaze over. I'm curious how you've managed to abstract. How did you get to like the what's in what playbooks are, what things you focused on first, because you've had a couple of years to build it, right? And you've got some knowledge before that. Let's be clear. Where did you focus first, and how did you get those ideas prioritized when you're building this out?
Yeah. So for us, you know, when we focused on those game books, we actually started with a set of 8 of them, and, you know, we've grown that since. And for us, it was a core set that we saw the most pervasive and common threats, right? So, you know, looking at, you know, account takeover, you know, account hijack, we're looking at also, you know, impossible travel, right? So looking at an IP block address, putting that into a firewall or into like a, you know, within blocking out an NSG somewhere or a firewall group within a security group in AWS, whatever that may be. Password reset, isolate endpoint, right? These are just kind of basic things. Going back to your question, Raf, is like we first focus on the level one, which is what controls do you have in place, which we can actually use an API to make a call, post the response, and do the action, right? Because in the day, if the customer doesn't have a control in place to actually provide the remediation and do something like a isolation on the endpoint, we can't do anything, right? All we're going to be able to do is send you a notification and say, hey, this is going on, and here's some context. Now go into your 4 or 5 different consoles and figure out how you remediate this. So the controls have to be there. There's, of course, limitations, because firewalls, as an example, if it's an appliance-based firewall, the APIs are pretty bad. We can't do anything. So that's going to be a little bit more difficult. But there's also some areas we can circumvent that and drive around some automation around remediation. So that's where we started around 8 core gamebooks. We've expanded that since. And what we do now is we kind of use what we call kind of a hive mentality. Since we get more customers that are smaller, they can onboard faster, and we can start looking at how they actually are looking at alerts and responding. It's actually been pretty fascinating to see how, if you take an IT operator, you put them in front of how we essentially manifested a triage process, is how do they actually look at incidents, close them out, and classify them. So we actually are constantly tracking on the analytics, and it's really interesting because what we found is that they actually naturally gravitate towards that process because it's very similar to an IT process, right? It's an ITIL process. It's a ticket. So I got to take a ticket. I got to open the ticket, identify the problem, and then close it. And so it's really not that much different. And so we just kind of built off that baseline knowledge and built an additional process and simplify that workflow. And every time we get a customer and their user to identify that workflow and get used to it, we start then identifying what additional game books we need to make based on the attack vectors that we're seeing propagate in that space. And they do separate, right? Not just in the segment, but the verticals, as you guys know. You know, some financial service company might be very different from a construction company in terms of what they're seeing in terms of threats.
So that all makes sense. My brain is currently thinking, why hasn't somebody done this yet? What makes you unique, and why hasn't somebody solved this before? Frankly, I'll ask you the kind of the value prop. Why hasn't somebody solved this before, and why are you the group to do it?
Yeah, I think you know we started the conversation. It's a really hard nut to crack, because one of the things that always typically has people running backup market or just like completely dropping this or not succeeding and failing is that, just look at the numbers on this, right? Customer acquisition cost can be moderate. It might be low depending on how you acquire the customer. But then you look at lifetime value. The LTV of these customers can be very low. So there's definitely pricing and economics that you have to consider. If you're not making your money, you're not going to live another day, right? So I think that's probably one of the big factors. The second one is that we are in a good time to be able to utilize these commoditized services, all cloud driven, to be able to get this technology at a very, very low price to our customers. You know, we saw big vendors today that are generational, right? You go look at, for example, CrowdStrike. You know, they came about 2012, 2013, and they said, hey, we're going to get away from our basic, you know, AV deployed out agents, you know, in our traditional way with scripts and stuff through local, you know, GPU policy. That's great. But once you start bringing in that cloud flexibility and that deployment capability, which we do entirely, it does help drive more scale. But the other thing that we do provide that's different, and this is something that we're going to continue investing towards over the years, is really giving capability to customer self-service. So this is really where we can bring down the customer acquisition costs, increase the lifetime value, and then empower that end user. So really, the way the platform was built was to embrace product-led growth. So our
Okay.
customers can get on there, and today it's self-service. In the future, we're going to allow them to be able to essentially upgrade, which for us is a cross-sell, upsell, and allow them to be able to expand their current security program through programmatic means. So it's really the factor of, I think, those three, the latter one being a huge piece where we really have only seen PLG adoption in the past 3 to 4 years. And it really hasn't, boiled over to security yet. It's been more on the just general SaaS side.
Interesting. Well, I like the approach. I mean, it eventually somebody was going to have to do it, because you're not going to look at the Palo Altos and the big companies of the world. They're never going to go down market. It's not worth it for them. Which you sort of look at and go, yeah, but somebody literally has to do this, because we're exposing, I hate this term, this kind of this soft underbelly, right? Like the part that nobody goes after is where attackers could find great ways in. It's like an AppSec, James. It's like all the open source stuff. Like you're like, oh yeah, that's gonna solve it. You're like, no, if you don't solve it, then somebody is that's where the attacker is gonna go. So I'm glad you guys are on it. I'm super curious at your kind of growth. Love the company name, and obviously I have a affinity for the two wackos that started it. That's always a good, that's a good place to be, man. I'm excited for you guys. This sounds like a really worthy endeavor. I'll leave it at that. It's a worthy endeavor. What's your growth look like? What's your adoption look like?
No, thanks, man. I appreciate that. We're getting growth. We actually are really working on some more mid-market customers today. Where we're seeing some adoption, especially, is around that 500 to about 2,000 seat count right now. And that's where customer traction becomes a little bit slower because it's more of a traditional sales cycle, right? So, but we're getting customers there. We're hitting those out pretty well. It's a strong value proposition because we can go to customers and say, hey, it's a consolidated platform, helps unify your security operations, or you can go to 4 to 5 different vendors and try to get the same value. You're not going to get there, right? So for
That's
us
true,
there,
100%.
exactly. So for us, I think that's where we've been getting a lot of the current traction. And we still have customers that actually our smallest customer today is 7 employees. So
Okay.
it shows that we can scale down. And we've automated a lot of that incident response remediation and tuning for them. So it's very low touch. But we
That's
have
awesome.
customers to that level. We have customers that are, north of 1,000 as well. And, we're on track right now to go, we're going after Series A early next year as well. So we're going towards that. The numbers, obviously, you guys have seen from a venture perspective have kind of shifted what the metrics need to be.
Yeah.
But we know that also, if you can prove out a PLG operational efficient model in business, those numbers can be a little bit more lower and accessible in terms of that next round because you're showing
Yeah.
a stronger multiplier. Yeah.
I did. So look, there is nothing, the nothing makes me more excited in this conversation, and the ability to say we've effectively brought on board companies as small as 25 people, and A, it's profitable for us, and B, it's effective for them. Because that really, to me, like 25 is a really small number. And in our previous work together, no chance that that would have happened. Like absolutely 0.0%, right? You're looking at minimum 250 to 500 before you get anything profitable. Forget profitable, anything the customer can afford at that scale. And to go down to a scale that small to be effective for them that's really cool. This is good. I'm really excited. I'm going to keep track of you guys. Come back in a year, or hell, come back after you get your Series A, and let's talk about what the next world takeover looks like. It's pretty exciting. You guys are just basically, are you US based, working on any region or the whole country?
We actually we're US based. We're headquarters. We got an office here in McKinney, expanding. All this whole DFW area is exploding. But We're actually working with some international partners. We
Nice.
have opportunities in Mexico. We're looking at a multi-year contract out of South Africa with several
I
providers.
saw that. I saw that recently.
I mean, the need is there, right? So it's not a regional local problem in the US. It's a global issue. So
That's super cool.
yeah, so I mean, that's a nice thing too, just going back to, you asked about the tech. Keeping it low cost is great, but also just using the right provider and the right services allows us to scale out. And the good thing about it is when we go international, like we do provide some customers have come to us and said, hey, you know what? We want this to be managed. And we don't want to really get in that game, but if a customer really needs it, we want to support them because it's really about the customer and the value they need.
Right.
So we can do that here locally because we have the people. And we want to do it to a certain degree. That's not going to be our main business. But overseas, the nice thing is that there's a bunch of people out there that have the bodies and expertise. They don't have the technology. So they want to get behind a platform, they want to get behind a brand, and they want to bring it together. And exactly, you have a fusion, right? So it's I think good opportunity for us to think about what that looks like in the next 2 to 3 years, because that's where we'll really start focusing more on that partner strategy.
Market synergies. Bingo card.
The hard part is keeping it so it doesn't become managed, right? Like the part that you don't want it to be, like as you slowly let it creep in,
Yeah,
and more
dude,
people are like, oh
right.
yeah, that's what I want. How do you keep it from saying, no, our business model is this, we've made minor exceptions without it overflooding,
Exactly. Exactly. That's well said. Yeah, I think that's the thing where the market is going to want to pull us that direction. Because that's what people kind of want. Because again, there's still a body issue out there in the market, even if it's not security.
Yeah.
But I think more people, we're going to see a transformation in the workforce globally. They're going to start learning IT. They're going to start learning cloud. They're going to start learning coding.
Yeah.
So people are shifting, right? Because we're seeing autonomy being introduced in all sorts of different verticals, outside of cybersecurity. So I think it's being at the precipice of that is important. And like you said, James, like yeah, we got to be pretty cautious there. Because that is something definitely you can fall into pretty fast, and next thing you know, you're like our previous company.
Yeah, well, I mean, there is benefit though. Like, if you can keep it, wrangled in, there's benefit to having some of that managed because now you can do the analysis on that and say, why is this managed? And what can we do to now get them off of managed? What are the reasons why somebody needs the manage? How do we then provide that solution so that we don't have to manage that? Here's those key pieces that we're missing from our solution that they can then take on and we don't need, like, what is that blocker and how do we overcome that?
Absolutely. One thing we've kind of thrown around in brainstorming as well too is that it's almost like a good driver's discount in the sense of like if you start with managed, you might grow into those shoes, you might become a good driver, right? And then you might want to say, hey, we want to be able to in-house the service, right? Because we see companies grow into that, right? They're like, we want to manage our risk internally. And once they kind of get to that maturity, it's like, hey, here's your discount, turn off the managed offering because of course that costs more. Go to the self-service offering and you've saved a ton of money, but you've already built a process, you've built the muscle. So now you're in a state of optimizing cost and now essentially leveling up your organization with security operations in-house. So we've kind of thrown that around as well. Of
That's
course,
interesting.
that's going to really be anchored on how fast companies can grow. But if they're early stage, we can see that happen pretty quickly, over a 2 to 3 year period.
Well, cool, man. Out of time, but that is cool. That is a novel approach, and I'm really excited to hear it. It's been a long time in the need column. So, congrats on the good start. Best wishes on the continued success, and go Series A.
Yeah. No, Raf, thanks for your support, man. You've always been there, so really appreciate it. Always love chatting with you. It's always fun, exciting. Gets a little goofy. It gets goofy. So that's the way. That's what makes it fun. So I appreciate it.
That's right.
And
That's
James, it's a
right.
pleasure as well.
It's been great. It's good
I'm
information.
due for a I'm due for a trip up back to the DFW in the near future, so we'll have to celebrate
Absolutely,
as only
man.
we know
Let's do
how.
it.
And we'll leave that to the folks' imagination as I sign us off. All right, thanks for joining us, Dan. ContraForce is the company website.
ContraForce.com.
There you go, ContraForce.com. Like the video game that we all love and play. Was it up, up, down, down, left, right, A, B, A, B, start? Is that how it went?
I've
Something
lost
like
count
that.
of how many people know that. It's pretty amazing, actually. That's like, it shows how like ingrained that is into your subconscious at this point. Yeah.
Shows how many cheaters there were back in the day.
Yes, exactly.
Listen, I was just very efficient. Okay, it's not cheating.
Yeah.
All right. Yeah. Good times. All right, folks. Thanks for listening. I hope you learned something. And if you are in this mid-market, low market, small, medium-sized business, this might be a really great opportunity to go try something out that. That a lot of you are probably desperate for and haven't figured out how to do on your own. So give it a shot. Anyway, for Stan over at Counterforce and James and myself, thanks for listening. We will catch you guys another time, another place, on another Down the Security Rabbit Hole podcast. Until next time, my friends, bye-bye.
As we fade out on another Down the Security Rabbit Hole episode, we'd like to encourage you to chat with our hosts and guests using the Twitter hashtag #DTSR. Please check out the show notes, catch up on any episodes you may have missed, and subscribe so you don't miss a future episode. So on behalf of Rafal, James, for now it's goodbye. We'll see you soon on another Down the Security Rabbit Hole podcast.